What's up? It's Delaney, and I'd love to invite you to become an honorary co-host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Do you want to pick episode topics and guests? Done. Want to surprise your loved ones with shout-outs on the show for a birthday, project launch, a much-needed divorce? Whatever you're up to, would love to be a part of the celebration. Get your favorite and least favorite quotes featured on the podcast, submit questions for our special guests, and find lots more new features and surprises at patreon.com/selfhelpless. You'll also get added to our Patreon Insider email list to easily redeem rewards via a quick email reply. Because we know hanging out on Patreon isn't everyone's thing. You can also opt out of emails if you prefer to be a silent supporter of the show. And don't worry, we do not Scrooge McDuck these contributions. 100% of proceeds go directly to operating expenses that make this weekly podcast possible and available to all. Learn more at patreon.com/selfhelpless or simply click the link in this episode's description. Thank you for helping me fill the void of being the last standing host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Thank you so much.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Self-Helpless. I'm Kelsey Cook.
I'm Delaney Fisher.
And today we are covering a topic that was a helpster's choice topic. It's matrescence. And we have an incredible guest on to talk about it. We have on Dr. Sarah Orrick. She is an MD. She's a Columbia University trained psychiatrist focusing on women's mental wellness and has specialized training in reproductive psychiatry. She runs a private practice where she combines the most up-to-date medical treatments with talk therapy, meditation, and a whole body complementary approach. She is just the best person to come on and talk about this. And we had such a great conversation with her all about the process of matrescence, which Delaney and I, full disclosure, we did not know until we did this episode today what that term meant. And it's, you know, similar to adolescence is kind of how she describes it. It's the process of becoming a mother and the changes that people go through with that mentally, physically, emotionally. So she got into so many helpful tips, not just with mothers and, you know, parents in general, I think including fathers, struggling with that. But we talked about decisions to not have kids and just getting support in general, whether you want to have kids or not. And
yeah.
And it's one of my favorite episodes in a while.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground, just like what can happen in the female body during pregnancy and childbirth and afterward. We talked about fertility stuff. We talked about people who regret having kids. We covered a lot of ground. And Dr. Sarah also shared some really exciting news with us that a platform of hers just got funded called Mavita Health, I believe it's called. And it's going to be something that provides resources to people from like conception to postpartum and might have the availability to like apply insurance to it. So definitely go into Dr. Sarah's space and stay, you know, up to date on any announcements about that, because that might be a really great new resource for people.
We hope that you guys find it as helpful as we did. And this is coming out on April 24th, which means I'm going to be in Denver this weekend. I'm so excited. I will be back at Comedy Works, which is one of my favorite comedy clubs in the entire country. It's where I shot my special. And then after that, I'm going to be in Uncasville in Salt Lake City in May. In June, I'll be in Las Vegas, Burbank. July, I'll be in Phoenix. And there are so many other tour dates coming up. So you can go to kelseycook.com and get tickets. And please go watch my special, The Hustler, on YouTube.
Yes, I love it. quickly before I plug my stuff is this episode was voted on by our Patreon community. So submitted by you, voted on by you. So if you want to vote on topics or submit topics that get covered on the podcast, you can head over to patreon.com/selfhelpless. And I also have another podcast called the Minimalist Business Podcast that you can get for free at DelaneyFisher.com. We talk about building your dream business, your dream career, you know, living intentionally, all that good stuff. So if you are a creative, if you are a mental health or wellness professional, feel free to come on over. It's a private show, but it's completely free and you can find it on my website.
Yay. All right. We hope you guys enjoy this interview with Dr. Sarah Orrick, and we will talk to you after the interview.
Dr. Sarah, thank you so much for being here today for this extremely important topic.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Shall we kick it off with your favorite or least favorite quote? Because our listeners love that stuff.
Sure. I didn't know least favorite was an option. I think that list would be very long. So I'm going to start with one that I actually love, which is by Daniel Siegel. He's also a psychiatrist and someone who does a lot of work around parenting. And the quote is, empathy is not a luxury for human beings. It's a necessity. We survive not because we have claws and not because we have big fangs. We strive because we can communicate and collaborate.
Wow.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Because I really think what starts to come up is sort of the importance around empathy, collaboration when it comes to becoming a parent and becoming a mother. And so often, you know, I think women especially are taught to be competitive and you know, one up one another. And I think, in fact, collaboration and that village is really what gets us to a better spot when it comes to this transition to motherhood, which I think is what we're going to be talking about today.
Yes.
Definitely. Yeah. Delaney and I personally are not mothers, but we have lots of close friends that are mothers, and we're watching them go through that transition. And I follow a lot of people in the YouTube space that have become mothers, and they've been very, very open about mentally and emotionally what that process has been. And I would love to just learn so much more about it from you, because I think it's really fascinating.
Yeah. Would you mind starting off with just what is matrescence? I didn't even know there was a formal word for it.
Yeah, I haven't
heard
that
word
either.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm really excited that it's catching on. So it was actually something that, an anthropologist came up with in the 70s and has really, I think, come into its own now. But really, matrescence is this transformation to motherhood. And we like to think about it very similarly to adolescence. And actually, that's how you know how to pronounce it. You can use, you know, it's matrescence like adolescence. And really, I think as a culture, we kind of acknowledge being an adolescent is really hard, right? There's physical changes, there's emotional changes. So much of you transforms during that time. And this is really to say, well, a similar thing actually happens during matrescence. For people, right? There's the huge bodily changes, there's hormonal impacts, but there's also this sort of psychological world that changes. And so really trying to think about the similarities in these two kind of life stages, not to mention people with female reproductive hormones and women go through yet another transformation in perimenopause. Maybe that's for another time. but matrescence is really exciting because I think people have acknowledged, well, of course I have body changes. I've grown a baby. But I think what we don't acknowledge or what we're starting to acknowledge is that there's changes in our brain. There's changes in the way that we see the world and in how we are in the world. And that's what's really exciting. It also actually relates to this empathy quotation by Daniel Siegel, because in some ways our brains change during pregnancy, but also for those non-birthing parents, it changes as well when we have a new baby. And really in order to grow empathy, to be able to understand the non-verbal cues our babies may give us. So there's so much there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that talked about a lot too, just the component of that you never are not worried about your child after you had, like, there's always, doesn't matter how old they get. I feel like a lot of mothers talk about always being concerned about how their child is, no matter what age they are. And I can't imagine how hard that is.
Yeah, and actually, that has to do with changes that happen during pregnancy and the postpartum, where we believe, especially for those who carry the baby, that there's an enlargening of the amygdala, which we kind of like to think about as the alarm system in our brain, very connected to trauma and all of that. But that's how we have moms that like wake up or sort of think they hear their baby crying, even if they don't, the phantom cries that happen in the shower, because the brain is so sort of attuned to like, is baby crying? Right. I got to be ready for them. And where, maybe in your 20s or before you had children, you wouldn't wake up if you heard anything at night. Now your brain is sort of almost hypervigilant in the way that, sometimes trauma impacts people to sort of be on high alert. And so certainly people describe, having this baby feels like you're thinking about, right? You're thinking about yourself now, but your brain is almost divided with, your child or your children, to also think about them, which, gets complicated. And then people ask, well, what's mommy brain? And why do I sometimes forget like some details that maybe don't even matter, the name of that actor in that movie or the name of the restaurant? And it's because your brain is really making space for other activities, including this growth of empathy or this amygdala change. So that's really exciting that we're starting to learn about those changes that happen, and they happen to fathers, they happen to people that adopt children. So it's more universal than we actually initially thought.
Oh wow. I always thought mom brain was just like intense sleep deprivation. So
That
it's
too. I mean, good point, right? Intense sleep deprivation makes us all loopy, and forgetful. But certainly the other there's other biological changes that also contribute to this mommy brain phenomenon.
Fascinating. I am very shocked. A lot of my close friends have become parents the last couple of years. I'm so shocked by how wildly different all of their pregnancy stories, birthing stories, months or years after having the child are. The craziest details that I didn't even know could happen to a female's body. What are the things that people come to you with the most often that say, like, I didn't even know this could happen to my body or to me? Could you just give us some, I don't know, some nuggets of all those things that people can be mindful of?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of fantasy around what it's like to carry, or to have the perfect pregnancy and then to have that perfect delivery and what that would be like. And you have the doula and, these little electronic candles, because you're not allowed to have real candles in most sort of hospital or birthing centers. The soft lighting and the music, and I think people imagine that it's going to be hard, but I think often what they don't plan on is for complications. And what I often see is people who had maybe some rigid ideas of what they wanted for delivery really struggle when they have an emergency C-section or a significant, maybe a preterm labor, like really complicated stuff that ends up being very different from what they had imagined. And I think it's that distance that really causes what we call postpartum PTSD or some significant symptoms. And you can imagine, right, when you have that experience where sometimes people don't even feel like they have autonomy over their body, then they go on to postpartum, where someone is maybe dependent on them, an infant's dependent on them for feeding. It can be really disorienting. And so what I try to sort of come back to is that we don't need to be pessimistic about your outcome or what kind of birth you are, but let's be a little bit more realistic about the range and variety of experiences people have.
Yeah, that has to be so hard to navigate because I feel like a lot of parents try to not go down the Google rabbit hole once they have a kid. One of the people I follow on YouTube, her name is Raw Beauty Christie, and she's become very, very open in her motherhood journey. And she has said that for her, it's been so hard the second she feels that there's something wrong with her child to not Google and make sure it's okay. And I would imagine that leading up to giving birth, you are trying to avoid like finding out worst case scenarios. It
I
just,
know. I
yeah,
know.
that's got to be
And
hard.
it's this it's a weird balance, right? Between being open to the possibility that everything is going to be great but not sort of attached to only that outcome. And people can have safe, you know, emergency cesarean sections, but it's the attachment to like, well, then I'm not a good enough mother, or I went, it was the easy way out, or I didn't experience a vaginal delivery, so I'm not, you know, X, Y, or Z. But certainly I think it's sort of the double-edged sword, right? It's so exciting to have so much information at our fingertips, but I think with people who have just even a little bit of an anxiety or baseline of anxiety, it can really like turn up the volume in terms of worries and concerns and conjectures. And so it's a fine balance of like, if you can edit what you see and not sort of go down the rabbit hole of diagnoses, but it's a really hard balance. And I think that's where it's important to check in with yourself and your support systems to see if the worries are kind of getting a little, overwhelming or a little bit out of your control, right? Where it's like, can you distract yourself and move on to a different topic, or are you not working all day because you're just Googling all these terrible things that can happen?
Right. Yes. So with online communities like Facebook group, I Regret Having Children, or the Reddit forum, like Regretful Parents, that have like hundreds of thousands, right? Like, what do you tell somebody who comes to you and they really regret having a kid and they're really conflicted with that?
Yeah, it's like on one hand, I'm kind of excited that these communities exist because, and only because, I think they're tapping into the ambivalence that many of us feel and most people feel. I think what becomes confusing is sort of this black and white.
Yeah.
Right. They're regretting children, but they have them.
Right.
Right. And so, and I don't think these people are planning on giving these children up for adoption or anything like that. So I think what it's tapping into, which is exciting, is like, no, we all have ambivalence around it. Like,
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I know sometimes I'm like, wait, my weekends are taking care of toddlers. I don't get to like sleep in anymore. I don't get to do anything else. Like, sure, there are moments where like, gee, it'd be really nice if I could just like hop on a plane and go anywhere in the world. But like, that's not something I can do at this point in my life. And so I certainly think what's exciting about that is that it's tapping into and also giving permission to people to say, right, I have ambivalence around this, or there are parts of my like past life that I really miss, right? That spontaneity, that sort of possibility of like, you could do anything this week from anywhere, right? Maybe gone. But I think, you know, I think I've heard some criticism around these communities. And I think it's important to think about that. Again, it's okay to have shared ambivalence. And I don't think it's black and white. I don't think there's a group of people that love having children and then a group of people that don't want their children or feel like they made a mistake or an error, regret it.
Yeah.
Regret is more nuanced, right? Yeah. Even the name is a little confusing.
I found them incredibly helpful when I was making my decision about whether to have kids or not, just because I was able to read personal stories from people who sounded like me, like my personality or my lifestyle that I enjoy. And I found them immensely helpful. So I think it takes a lot of courage for people to admit that they're struggling with that.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's also a bias because, again, you know, they have children. And so that is something to think about. It's also interesting to actually talk to people who've made the decision to not be parents, and then what it's like when they're like older, or what their lives were like. And certainly in this economy, right, a double income with no kids is a nice lifestyle for sure.
Yeah, Kelsey and I are both dinks.
If you have
a
partner, yeah. Yeah, okay, good for you. I was one for a while and it was really nice.
It's not a bad life for sure. Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying, that those groups are so helpful, and it's almost like the way that they're, I don't know if I want to say branded, but that the term of regret can come off so negative and black and white. I think of it more as like a collective mourning of your previous life, like you were saying.
Yes, it's and making it okay.
Like, yeah, like it's, yeah. Of course it's okay to mourn a life that you used to have, and also to celebrate the great things of this new life. But I mean, that's, I just think that's so healthy and normal. And yet there's some stigma around parents that you're supposed to not feel that way, or that you're like a cold parent or an unloving parent if you feel that way. And I think you're right that that black and white thinking is not helpful for it. But how do you feel like breastfeeding and the debates around that is one of the biggest things that you deal with in your work, of women feeling guilty if they are not breastfeeding, or pressure to breastfeed for a certain amount of time? That just seems like something that I've heard talked about a lot on the YouTube videos.
Sure. So yeah, let's go to that. But I actually want to mention that I'm also really excited about the discourse of making the decision of whether to have kids or not. I think people assume, because I'm in this space, I'm all things mothers trying to conceive postpartum, that, you know, I might be a natural, I wanted to be a mother since the day I was born, but that wasn't actually the case for me personally. And I'm really excited by people who are making these very conscious decisions about not having kids, and also really want to validate that, because I think often people assume it's a default choice, or it's because of some infertility issue or a struggle. And it's really exciting to hear more of this as a choice, similarly of like having one child versus several children, or the, you know, the two children that everyone expects, American families to have. And so I'm really excited about all of that discourse. And I think that's to say, I'm hopeful about the discourse around breastfeeding and how we can also have autonomy over how we feed our children. But certainly I think the pendulum has swung in the direction of an obsession with breastfeeding. This is for a variety of different reasons, but what it often does is put an immense amount of pressure on families when it might not be possible, right? You might be on a medication that's contraindicated, or you might just not produce that much breast milk than what your baby needs. And so I'm really excited about the discourse around feeding, and whether it's just, you know, for some people who've had, for example, sexual trauma, breastfeeding doesn't feel great. It might be triggering, right? There might be something there. There's also something called dysphoric milk ejection reflex, which is a really interesting phenomenon called DMER, you know, dysphoric milk ejection reflex. And it actually is an experience that people have that when the letdown of the milk happens, they get really dysphoric or depressed for the moment. And it can be really jarring.
Whoa.
So they might not have any
breastfeeding.
Yes. When they're starting breastfeeding. So when that breast milk is coming down, or even sometimes when baby is latched, it can be a really disoriented, scary, right? Intrusive thoughts that they've never had before. So I think it's important to highlight that everyone's experience is different. For some, it's like, oh, it's the most beautiful bonding they've ever had with their child. That's great. But it's not the case for everyone else. And so I think, again, giving back the autonomy to parents about what they do with their body and how they do it, I think is really important. Obviously, breastfeeding confers a lot of benefits in terms of immunity and all these other things. But I think in the end, we want parents and children that are healthy and fed, and it's not worth sort of some of the agony that I see some of my patients go through, or on-demand breastfeeding where you have to wake up every 2 hours. Like, for someone who has any anxiety or mood issue, like, that is a quick way to kind of accelerate that. And so certainly I'm hopeful that things get better around this discourse. Now, formula shortages don't help. sort of like the worst thing that could ever happen.
Oh my gosh, these
patients are like, I just weaned and then I'm on, and now all of the formula in the country is out of stock.
Right. Or insanely expensive if you can't
exactly.
find it.
Right. Or you're right. European formulas are very expensive and inaccessible to most. And so, you know, it's all these dynamics that when we like actually step back, it's, you know, we live in a country that isn't so kind to parents.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Samantha Ravindahl is another YouTuber I follow, and she had done a video about how disappointed she's been in the healthcare system in terms of checking on her mental health. She felt like all of the checkups she was having were all just focused on like, how's the baby doing?
Yes.
And even her conversations in regular life with maybe friends or just people around were like, how's the baby? And nobody was being like, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And
I'm so glad you bring that up.
Yeah, please go follow Samantha Ravindahl on YouTube. She is so amazing. But yeah, she just was like, I, as a human being, just went through one of the most traumatic things I will ever go through. Yeah. I'm going through a lot. And there's just so much emphasis on only how is the baby doing?
Yeah, it's the phenomenon of like, you know, pregnancy is actually the time where women and a birthing person could has the most amount of medical care they ever receive in their life, right? Outside of people who have obviously chronic illness or anything like that. But this is the most they interact with the health system. And you're absolutely right. Sometimes people only get one postpartum visit. We call it like the phenomenon of being like the princess when you're pregnant. It's like, oh, are you okay? Let's see you every other week, all this stuff. And then, you know, once you're done, you're sort of discarded and you're like, wait, where's the baby? Right. You're like, okay, good luck to you. How's the baby? I even feel that in the hospital, like, you know, in nurseries, you know, how in movies you're like, oh, all the babies are in a nursery. Well, that really ended with COVID-19. They didn't want all the babies together. And so I don't know if nurseries are coming back. But what you would find is that dorming with parents after birth now is really popular. And a lot of parents want to have the baby close by. But what that ends up doing is that you can imagine someone who's labored for 24 hours or something ridiculous, then had a C-section. Let's say it's a really complicated birth, then is literally thrown into a room and told, take care of your baby 24/7. So it starts real soon. The minute that baby is out, it's like, it's your responsibility. And then I remember I had my kids during COVID, and I remember being told, oh, and you can't fall asleep. Don't you fall asleep with the baby on the breast, because, you know, you can roll on the baby. And I was like, whoa, like I just had a surgery and this is how I'm being treated with like, and I'm a physician, right? So really high, sort of health literacy, but I can imagine how difficult that could be for someone else if it was really hard for me. And even, you know, even around pain medication. So I didn't want opioids, for example, and I just wanted Tylenol and Motrin. And I think I asked for Motrin a little bit early and it was like, it's too early for that. And I'm like, but I was just cut open and I'm not getting opioids. So this really weird dynamic of kind of feeling abandoned, I think, from very early after giving birth, unfortunately. There's some really great, I think, education. I think if you have a doula, there can be more realistic education, one-on-one education around what the birth process is going to be like. So certainly an open mind to anything can happen. Right. An open mind to, yes, you are right. This is a huge experience, but to sort of like, and I think it's a really great parallel for what life is really, that we're not in control. And to sort of be able to have those trusted people around us, right? If it's our partner, if it's our doula, to help advocate for us if we're not able to. Or a trusted physician or midwife, right? That is the first step. Like I always tell people, I know it's really hard to find doctors, but if you get weird vibes from the beginning, from the person who's taking care of you during pregnancy, you're not feeling like they're hearing you. You're not feeling like you're able to communicate well. Try to find someone else if you can, who can really make you feel a bit better about what's going to happen. And of course, I want to say that's not a choice, unfortunately, that many people have. But if you do have it, to really choose the right people to have around you, but to also so I think the right people is sort of the first step. And then the next step is to sort of think about, I can do what I can. I can do my breath work if that's something that you're interested in. You can do some hypnobirthing if that's something you're interested in. And I really love these mindfulness approaches because I think they can be really helpful, especially in calming our nervous system down, because it can be, you know, labor and delivery can be a very scary process. But ultimately to kind of lean into, I don't have control over this, and this might look different than I imagined it.
Yeah. That's great. That's a great advice. Just kind of managing your expectations about the entire thing. Do you ever recommend certain exercises to your clients who like need to mourn or grieve their old life, like we were talking about, or the life that they might not have because they now have kids, or there are things that they can do to take time?
Yeah. I think that can look in all sorts of different ways. I'm a huge proponent of therapy for everyone, but you know that I'm also biased. So I think that can come out in therapy. But if therapy isn't accessible to you, I think journaling can be fantastic. And I think there can also be a time to kind of get glimpses of what it's like to be spontaneous. So go out with your girlfriends, kind of like try to do little things where it feels like, oh, this is part of who I am or who I was. You know, those parts of us aren't completely lost. We're still there. But I think it's about trying to have circumstances where we get to sort of feel that. In terms of like self-care, I think self-care has become like more of a chore. So I think we like redefining self-care is important, and it can look in all sorts of ways, but it doesn't have to be like an expensive spa trip or getting your nails done, right? It can just be if you're losing your temper, if you're not sort of showing up in the way that you want to show up, do you have supports around you that can say, okay, I got you. I got the baby. You go have a timeout, you do what you need to do to kind of recharge. And so a lot of what we're talking about is actually, can you build community around you that can really support you through this journey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're big fans on the show of self-care being also in those bite-sized steps. Yeah. I agree that it can sometimes be almost more stressful to figure out how to take care of yourself.
Like, oh, I need 20 minutes to meditate. I'm like, okay, that's going to be hard.
Right. Yeah. I talk about the book, The Artist's Way, all the time on the show. It's my favorite book. And one of the exercises she talks about are finding the small things to treat yourself. And that for one of her clients, the author of the book, she talked about that her client loved buying things of raspberries at the store, like fresh raspberries. But that there would be times where she wouldn't let herself because she'd be like, oh, it's like a little expensive. When in reality, it's truly like $5-6, but sometimes we get into that mindset where we're almost being mean to ourselves or like depriving ourselves.
Yes, and it's that, like, deprivation. And that and that, I think that's coming up a lot also because the economy is sort of tanking. Inflation makes things really high. And I think that deprivation mode kicks in for a lot of people.
Yeah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So if you're just noticing, maybe there are those small things that you're not letting yourself have, but they actually do make an impact on your happiness. Just trying to let yourself do those small things. Cause
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I am so thrilled that you, this is kind of going back to earlier, but when you're talking about that, you actually are happy to hear about that sort of discourse around deciding not to have kids, because even this is something that I've, a decision I've come to recently in life in the past year-ish. And I am a little self-conscious sometimes. Even coming into this episode, I felt a little, there's almost like a shame around it. Mm-hmm. Like, especially with this topic and talking to you, I almost felt like, oh, am I going to be looked at like one of those people who is cold for not wanting kids?
Yes. And I struggled with this a lot because I actually did this before having kids. Uh-huh. And I think people were like, oh, you must have kids or you must be really interested in having kids. And I was like, I'm actually not sure about that. But that doesn't mean that I can't help you or can't empathize about what your situation is. So I've totally felt that both personally and professionally, which is interesting. But I do think that we need to have more of that sort of being proud or being or feeling confident in that decision that we're making, and that it's not a moral failing or anything else, that we simply just don't necessarily want to have this particular experience. And I want to be clear, even though we're highlighting matrescence as this point of huge transformation, we transform throughout our entire lives, right? Yeah. There is points of growth for us in our entire lives. And so I don't think, I don't think motherhood has to be a part of that for everyone. And we certainly should start to unlink, right, womanhood with motherhood.
Such a powerful thing to say, because that's been something that I've felt kind of emotional about even in the past couple months as it's come up for me. Like, God, I feel like I'm not, like by the end of my life, I worry that I will look back and not feel like I lived out being a woman to the fullest, or that I'm not a real woman because I didn't have not only the motherhood experience, but I think that physical experience of giving birth is such a like a point of pride, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. I look at my friends who have given birth and I'm like, Jesus Christ, you're like a superhero to me.
Yes.
And so I think by choosing not to, there is shame around it. It's such it's a whole new world mentally I've stepped into lately, where it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah, but I'm so excited about talking about that. And I think being able to express that shame and kind of understanding, where is that coming from? And I actually think it's probably, right, these cultural factors or this narrative that we're so used to hearing. But I think it's important, right, even as someone with children or without children, to be able to kind of say, no, actually, this is an important conversation to have. And again, I think there are so many other aspects of being a woman that we also have to talk about that and figure that out. Because I also think that that gets people who do have children, especially in heterosexual couples, in really difficult positions where the woman is sort of burdened with a lot of that invisible labor. And there's a real struggle there, right? So many mothers have left the workforce because of everything that's happened with childcare and COVID-19. And I think it's really important for us to kind of talk about the other side and the other options and making that a valid choice for other people. And again, not this default or like, oh, I don't really want to talk about this, or there's some shame around it. So I'm so excited to hear this and would love to talk more about that.
Yeah, I second. So I know I second all that. I've literally been told to my face that there might be something wrong with me or defective about me because I don't want kids, and that I should get my hormones checked because it's not normal, you know? And so like, you think, wow, maybe is there something wrong? Is everybody feeling like they want kids and there's something wrong with me? But I just never had that yearning or desire. And coming to terms with that was very freeing. And I just think it's such a strange thing in our society that, you know, I'll get questions of like, why don't you want kids, or you're going to regret that, or what, you know, why? But you can't ask somebody, well, why did you have kids? Why did you have kids? Why do you have them? What were your reasons? That's kind of seen as like, that's offensive, but it's not like offensive to ask somebody what's the deal with not having kids. What do you think that you can say about that?
Well, the first thing is, like, you know, I think we have to teach certain people, especially of a certain generation, boundaries. I'm thinking I know the type of age range that's making those assumptions, not to be ageist. But I do think that there is, first of all, like, I think we all need to work on boundaries and what we ask people and don't ask people and what feels right, respectful, and something that's honestly quite private, unless you want to start talking about it like we are in this situation. But I think in a similar way, like, I think it's time that we acknowledge having children leads to ambivalence, right? These regret Facebook groups. Also, not having children may lead to a similar ambivalence.
Right.
Right. Yeah. These are, and that's okay. But I think we have to start to really, and especially, I think there's shaming on both ends of mothers to people who aren't mothers, and also vice versa. And I think it's time that we kind of talk about, well, how do we accept, right? Just like, you know, we decided to stay in Los Angeles, right? Versus moving to a more reasonable cost of living city. And yet, like, I have ambivalence around that, and that's what, and I'm staying here, but I have ambivalence around it. And similarly, I am totally, agree with Kelsey's decision. I don't know the reasons you moved to Minnesota, but like, there's a lot of great things about living there and doing that. And so in the same way of, like, we all make different sorts of choices, and it's important to respect them and have curiosity around them. But I think, I think we have to show more humility about, like, nothing's wrong with you. You don't need your hormones tested.
Thank you, Dr.
instead,
Sarah.
Just being curious of, like, oh, well, tell me about that decision. I'm so used to people, like, just always wanting children. Like, tell me about why that's right for you or what you're thinking about that. But in some ways, I think this is also gendered. I don't think men who make this similar decision are asked those questions.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
Completely agree. Yes. Yeah. I feel like as I was getting close to that decision, I, for a really long time, kept thinking there was going to be some aha moment of that black and white feeling, like we've been talking about with so many different aspects of this, but I thought it was going to be like, I'd wake up and just know that I 100% all of the things were on the pro column or the con column, I guess, of having kids. And I realized at one point that it's just, at least for me, that's never how I'm going to feel. I'm never going to feel like 100%.
Most people don't.
Yes, exactly. And that's what
even if they're pregnant, even during their pregnancies, they're like, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Even once they have kids.
Yes,
and I think,
yes,
like you said, you were talking about the ambivalence of people who choose not to have kids. And I think that's something I will have for the rest of my life. But I know for me that the reasons I didn't want kids outweighed the reasons to have them. And
absolutely.
I think people who are struggling to make that decision, I don't know if other people feel that way, but at least I did. I had that idea in my head that you had to be 100% one way or another. And I wish more people talked about that. I don't think it's that common to feel 100% about either decision.
Yeah, I think normalizing that is so important and starting to, like, discuss that a little bit more. But I also think, you know, something that's really important to consider is that we can have that maternal spirit or sort of experience these things in all sorts of facets of life. We can be maternal in different ways without actually ever having to be a mother. That's, like, one point. And also, you know, I'm not saying we give birth to inanimate objects, but, like, we can create things. We can,
I love my phone a lot. I will say the relationship I have with my phone.
I birthed my puppy. I birthed both my dogs.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, I think about artists and, like, creating something new or doing something, like, in that, like, we do generate sort of new things or give birth to things, writing, different creative endeavors, work, you know, I think in a lot of ways, being a physician for me, and maybe that's where my ambivalence was, where it's sort of like, oh, I was like, I'm satisfied with being maternal. I mean, like, I do that every day with patients in some ways. Yeah. I'm supportive of them. I have a holding space for them. And I think in some ways that might've been where I'm like, I don't, that itch seems scratched, right? Like, I don't, I don't know. Like, I think you can get that experience through all sorts of different sort of experiences in life of mothering. And so I also think that's an important point to kind of point out.
I love that. I mean, it's funny for my job to be like, I gave birth to these dick jokes, but I do. But you know,
but you
funny
do
is,
you,
like,
but you create.
Yeah, there. But you're right. There's something that's so fulfilling for me about my job, and that you do have that freedom, and you are creating something that is yours. It's. I have never thought of it as a maternal thing, but you're right. I think there must be some aspect of it there.
And you do stand up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's right. Like, that is delivering so much of yourself. That's vulnerability, right? Yeah. Those are in some ways a parallel experience to kind of the birthing experience, right? I can't imagine creating the stuff and then presenting it to people on a stage.
Yeah. It's a very interesting life to live, but I really do love it so much.
Yes. I have a fertility question I'm wondering if you could shed light on. So I've read a lot of articles about the age 35 and how that is, leads back to like a stat from the 1700s in France or something regarding like church birth records and all this stuff. So people who like didn't have modern healthcare, nutrition, electricity, were still referencing this very outdated thing. But then there was like a 2004 study that came out that said 82% of women ages 35 to 39 get pregnant within a year. Do you have any stats on like, what are we looking at 2023 regarding like fertility myths and debunking those?
Well, a really sad statistic that I came across recently, and I think this is right, but it's like less than 4% of research is dedicated to women's health.
Yeah.
Oh, God,
so,
that feels about right.
So now I understand why we have to sort of go back in time so far to find any statistic to fit. But surely there is a lot around like age 35 or 36 and how fertility rapidly declines. I think it's sort of this double edge. There is some reality to like, right, the egg quality that you have at those ages is very different from when you were 20. Fair. Mm. But I think the last stat that you quoted, that most people are able to conceive spontaneously during those years, it just takes a little bit longer. I think the problem is that we're so used to thinking like, oh, you know, if you blink, you'll get pregnant, and not truly understanding how it works, and that it actually, right. You can only get pregnant certain days of the month when you ovulate. I was trying to think back if I really understood that, like before I went to medical school, and I'm actually not sure. I think I thought you could get pregnant, you know, all the time. And so I think there's a little bit of like myths around that. And then I think it's simply like, we think, oh, I was so good at not getting pregnant. How come I can't just get pregnant like that? And I often see, right, these millennial moms being like, no, but I'm ready now. So like, it needs to happen in 1 to 2 months, but the stat that you just quoted of like, it might happen in a year, for most people that age is really important. I do think that there's realities to the aging issue, and with egg quality, unfortunately, that's also true for men and an aging sperm. And now we're having a decline in quality of sperm and all sorts of issues, which we think might be from environmental toxins, but also an increased use in cannabis. So it's important to also think about actually male infertility is quite a big problem, but it's often landing on the women, right, as their problem or their issue. So I think that's another thing to note. So, you know, my thoughts are, if it's something that you're considering and you don't have a partner by like your mid-30s, if egg freezing is at all something that is accessible to you, some insurance does cover it, right? There's some great places that are trying to make this more economical, then that's something to consider as sort of an insurance policy. But, you know, IVF is also complicated and comes with a lot of baggage.
Right.
Good point with all that. That's, yeah. Whew.
Yeah. Do you have any parting advice for women, for couples who are going through matrescence? I know that it seems like it's quite a long process, there are different parts of it, but maybe couples who have recently given birth, anything that could help them?
Yeah, I mean, I think to reflect back on what it was like to be an adolescent, it felt uncomfortable. You might not feel totally like yourself. but you'll get back to like a homeostasis. You'll get back to a new version of yourself. It might not be exactly who you were before having children, but it's sort of a growth process. And I think once you're on the other side of it, and listen, it never, it continues, we continue to grow as human beings, regardless of whether we have children or not. But I think it comes with a lot of bumps and challenges, but there's also great joy in those moments. And so I think the thing to take away from is if they're feeling like those moments of joy and happiness are few and far between, and there's more sort of low mood or high anxiety, it might be important to talk to a professional and really try to sort out what's happening. I also think, you know, if you're sort of feeling like that, we're like, where's the joy in all of this? Then it's a good time to start looking around, thinking about your community and whether you need a little bit more support.
Yeah. Amazing. Oh, yes.
Thank you.
And
gosh, you've been such a great guest.
Yes, this has been.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Can we do another one on, on choosing not to be a parent?
Oh my God, we could talk about that for a long time. Yeah, we would love to have you back on, Julie.
Dr. Sarah, where can people find you, your work, all that good stuff?
You can find me on Instagram at Sarah Orrick MD. And from there's other places to go.
Fabulous. Yay. Thank you so, so much for taking the time to educate us.
This is so fun.
Ooh, what an episode. Learned a lot.
Yeah, I really do want to have her back on.
Yes.
I'd be so curious how much of our listeners, how many of our listeners don't want to have kids.
We should poll. I mean, even I know Instagram is not a super accurate depiction of all of our subscribers, but we could always do a poll on Instagram just to see.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
percentage wise.
Yeah, I would just be curious. But anyway, it's so nice to have somebody like her on to talk about all sides of it, even though she is a parent. Yeah. It was just nice that there was no judgment from her.
Yeah, absolutely. And based on what you just said, Kels, there was a study that I read recently that said 30% of people are in the United States, I believe, are sharing that they do not want children, which we can always say that that's usually an underestimate because so many people either undecided or they don't feel comfortable sharing that information. So maybe, I don't know if it's an accurate kind of thing too. We do have an iTunes review of the episode. This is from Claire with no E, and it says, "Truly, thank you. So glad I found this podcast. I literally searched comedy self-help on the podcast app and decided to try you guys out. Finally, I found my binge-worthy podcast hosted by funny, wise, talented women. While depression constantly discourages me from making positive changes in my life, this podcast in my ear every day inspires me to start somewhere. Just listening to an episode makes me feel like I've done something constructive. I'm playing around with feng shui light right now. I look forward to many more episodes." Claire. Thank you.
So nice. Thank you. And I hope that your feng shui journey is going well. I feel like my feng shui has become pretty light too.
Yes. And sending you so much love. Navigating depression is a challenge. And like, thank you for tuning in and taking the time to write that to us. That just means so much that it's helping you in some way.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yes. Kels, any segments?
You know, I've been living my best life lately, to be honest.
That's good.
Outside of the mom stuff, I feel like right now it's just, I'm so excited with how my special's been going, and I've been excited about doing my new material on the road, and just been really loving living with my boyfriend and just watching good TV shows and cooking meals and getting takeout. I don't know. I don't really have a specific update other than I'm just happy right now.
Things are feeling good. Hey, that's a good update. That's good shit. I just have a quick one. I have a hot rec for my segment. You mentioned TV shows. I've been really loving Sex Education. Have you watched it?
No, but I've heard good things.
It's so good. It's fucking great. I mean, it's got everything. It's funny. It's heartwarming. There's important conversations happening. It's fucking great. Highly recommend. I think it's on Netflix. I'm so bad. I always ask Cam, like, what streamer was that show I was watching on?
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix. And I think there's 2 or 3 seasons. Anyway, I've been loving it. So recommend if you want something heartwarming and a good laugh and just also inspiring.
Amazing.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I should check it out. I've got a whole list of shows from you that I gotta check out.
Yes, that's a good one.
Yeah. Okay,
All right,
guys. Well,
everybody.
I can't wait to see you helpsters in Denver this weekend. Truly one of my favorite cities ever to perform in. And get those tickets at
Yeah.
kelseycook.com.
DelaneyFisher.com for the Minimalist Business Podcast. We'll talk about creative projects and building a business and all that good stuff. Would love to have you.
Yay. Okay, guys. Happy Monday. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Self-Helpless Podcast. You can find our Patreon community, merch, and our individual work at selfhelplesspodcast.com. We'd be thrilled if you shared this episode with a friend, or feel free to post it on Instagram and tag at Self-Helpless Podcast so we can repost you and say thank you.
Yeah.